It's our weekly catch-up with the National Party's Denise Lee.
Denise.
Hey, how you doing?
I am okay. I'm happy. What about you?
I'm happy too. I'm happy too. The sun is trying to come out and I'm happy.
It's really tempting. We've just had some hail hitting our windows over here.
Oh.
So, yeah.
I'm coming to you live from Mount Wellington, so we don't have hail in Mount Wellington.
Well, maybe it's coming your way, or maybe you get to dodge it. We'll find out.
We will.
Yeah. But we'll jump into it. So, yep. Freshwater proposal. So, National has kind of come out with a bit of criticism towards this. Can you tell us all about that?
Yeah, so just for context, and maybe listeners would already know this, but the primary sector, our farming community, accounts for 60% of our exports, right?
Yep.
And by anyone's measuring stick, is the backbone of our economy. Mm. And we have to be really mindful of that in everything that we do. So you can't get great healthcare, transport, education, if we're not selling something to the world in our little old trading country that, you know, enables us to have a great affluent economy. So what our problem is with this freshwater proposal, which, by the way, has taken 2 years to actually finally see what has been proposed, we thought it would come out a lot sooner than this, is that there's just little to no economic analysis for the caps and the measures that they're putting in. No mention of the straight out costs that will be put on farmers and our wider economy. So go figure. You know, it's one thing to take 2 years to come up with something, but it's another to come up with something that will put restrictions and costs. And this is the backbone of our country.
Interesting. So this is not the first time, obviously, we've seen this government attempt to work at cleaning up waterways. We had the water tax a while back, for instance. Is cleaning up the waterways a priority for National?
Yeah, well, I mean, we welcome anyone to analyse what we did when we put in a comprehensive national policy statement when we were in government, right? And we worked alongside the primary sector, not at, but alongside the primary sector. And you can look at the data, the government's own data, the current government's own data, over the last 5 years, and see that things were steadily improving. So you can look at data from Land, Air, Water, Aotearoa, and go look for yourself. So our comprehensive, it's called an NPS, a National Policy Statement, which sets out, you know, the expectations for the sector. And over those last 5 years, dairy farmers fenced off over 98% of all waterways and spent over $1 billion in environmental investment. So we felt that we were heading in the right direction at the right pace with the sector, and now we've got something that's very, very much saying, well, here it is, there's no economic data around this, there's going to be costs, but we're just going to go on and do it anyway. It will force, Laura, some farmers, we think, to look at land conversion, to think about changing farmlands into forestry. And if we're going to cut our food production, are we prepared to go with what that means to our economy?
But swapping to a forestry, wouldn't we be looking at increasing some kind of economic, another area, another sector economically?
Yeah, sure. So people would still be making a buck out of forestry.
Yeah.
No two ways about that. But if that means cutting food production, so no sheep and beef, then what will happen is that food production will shift to another country who will produce it, and no two ways about this, another country will produce it less efficiently and with higher emissions than we will. So is it cut off the nose to spite the face? You know, the perverse effects, that's what I'm talking about. Do we understand what this means economically? Because the proposal that's just come out from the government has little to no economic analysis. For something that's taken 2 years to come out, that's pretty telling.
Now, one thing about this proposal so far, there's $229 million package in the budget to help with that transition for farmers. Do you think that's enough?
Well, no, not because our estimate for what the impact would be would suck up that 200 million, you know, in a very short amount of time. So no, it would not be enough. But hey, we're not actually sure because the analysis, the economic analysis, isn't there. Mm-hmm. If you look at the document, the mention of just straight out costs, surely for something, and I know I'm being a bit repetitive here, but for me it's sort of ABC, surely something that's taken this long could have been a lot more detailed on the raw costs to those who will face caps on nitrogen levels, discharge levels, winter grazing and so on.
Mm. Do you think this government is attempting to push the particularly farming sector, but dairy farming in particular, away from that industry in these changes?
Look, I don't know what the end game is, but I do know that we are sincerely facing really low levels of confidence in our primary sector. So, you know, just look at any survey that's coming out, submissions that are coming. You know, we're supporting an independent climate change commission, and we're supporting many elements of the zero carbon bill, but some people in the primary sector are feeling like there's just a lot of pressure and attention on them, and this is just another hit that they feel that they're taking. So, like I said, you don't cut off your nose to spite your face. You've got to take the primary sector. 60% of our exports, we can't ignore how they're feeling and the level of sentiment.
Mm. I'm going to shift on to Old Mangere Bridge. I was really surprised when I saw on your Facebook page that you were very against this. Can you tell us a bit about why?
Yeah, well, this is, I don't know if anyone's cottoned on too much, Laura, but this little 25 million footbridge, and I say little because, you know, in the grand scheme of things, 25 mil these days only gets you so far. But this was something that, so it's in my patch, it goes from Onehunga over to Mangere Bridge, if anyone knows that. And they're forging ahead with this footbridge, which they designed and consulted on back in 2012-ish.
Yep.
So back then, we didn't even have a conversation about light rail. Definitely East-West Link, which is a $1.8 billion program under our government. These weren't in the making, so certainly weren't designed. Now that we're forging ahead with these big projects, why the heck would you build a $25 million footbridge, which looks pretty funky, you know, pretty cool, but why would you build that when you're planning on putting light rail across the harbour there and you don't know what's happening with East West because the government's put it all on ice? So you've got massive multi-billion dollar projects, and just by simply building this footbridge, can anyone assure me that you won't then have to put a third bridge or a third, you know, third structure to carry light rail over the harbour? Of course you're going to have to. You know, they're promising light rail to the airport. Well, you've got to get to the airport somehow over the water. But so why would you forge ahead with this? And so I'm really sort of hit topsy, I'll admit, when yesterday to some stakeholders that I've been gathering together in the area, the Harbour Restoration Society, the Onehunga Enhancement Society, even the Sea Scouts who use, you know, the harbour water edge all the time. You know, when a letter came back to us yesterday from Twyford just confirming that this is going ahead, and confirming that he doesn't know when light rail is and he doesn't know when East West is, but this is going ahead, that is just a big fat wastage of taxpayer dollars.
Mm, interesting. So you see absolutely no value in having that?
Oh, no, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. We totally want to. So this is replacing a bridge that has become very unsafe.
Mm-hmm.
So absolutely, as a community, we want to cycle over between Mangere Bridge and Onehunga.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, don't get me wrong on that, but the short-sightedness of this particular bridge that does not future-proofed for light rail, does not take into account what's happening with east-west, you know, can someone please tell us what's happening with east-west? It just doesn't take into account any of these big projects which have surfaced in the last couple of years. So, you know, there are other solutions, Laura. There's something called a Bailey Bridge, which is a temporary structure. And they used to do it in World War II. They've done it down at Old Fox Glacier, you know, with the whole big flood, you know, and then all the rubbish that's accumulated down there. So you can build temporary structures while you plan for and get ready for the best outcome that you can. Instead, they're not doing something temporary. They're building a permanent footbridge that will... I mean, here's another question. What would iwi think? They've got a claim, a Y8 treaty claim on the water.
Mm.
What would they think about a third bridge?
Well, according to Auckland Council's page on this, they said between 2012 and 2015, they were consulting with the community businesses and mana whenua of the area. So, I mean, that would kind of lead me to believe they have consulted.
Yeah, so they consulted on this footbridge, right? Mm-hmm. So back then, it was the footbridge, but back then, mana whenua and Auckland Council did not have light rail on the table. They did not have east-west on the table. So that context back then was just simply replacing the footbridge that already is there. Everything has changed. It's a $6 billion light rail proposal. It's a $1.8 billion, well, actually the government's halving it. So my point is, and we've also got Onehunga labelled as a transformation area by Auckland Council. So everything has changed since that consultation and since iwi agreed. I don't think for a second that iwi will just go, oh yeah, go ahead, build this footbridge, and then by the way, you know, we'll be happy for you to build another light rail bridge later on.
Mm.
That will be three bridges in the same place.
Mm. I'm going to shift on to our last subject for the day.
Yeah.
So gun law reform. National has been accused of playing politics by the New Zealand Police Association. What do you have to say to that?
Well, funnily enough, I think it's the police union themselves that inflamed this. So what we know for context is that the second tranche has not been introduced into Parliament, so we don't have, we don't even know exactly what the legislation looks like yet. There was a leaked document, and now all of a sudden we've got the police union out, quite frankly being really inflammatory, comparing us to NRA, saying that any critics of, well, implying that any critics of the gun program are trolls, you know, via their front cover image. It's sort of, it's a bit puzzling, really, because if they want political unity on this topic, then they should be spending their time lobbying the government and lobbying the police to provide better reforms rather than sort of inflaming a discussion over legislation that hasn't actually been tabled yet. And we don't have a caucus position yet because we haven't seen the ledge to look at it.
Mm. So the gun buyback scheme in particular, they were quite affronted by Simon Bridge's position that it was a fiasco. In particular, they said anyone who has been to a buyback event would know that the opposite is true. Did you by any chance go to any of the buyback events?
No, I haven't, but I've definitely had a lot of contact with you know, constituents who've come to see me, ask my opinion. So no, I haven't been to a gun buyback event.
So are you saying,
you know, the topic's been pretty big for most MPs, if not all?
Yeah, but you're saying you haven't been to an event, but people are coming to you and asking for your opinion.
Yeah, on the gun program as a whole.
Mm.
Yep, absolutely.
It shouldn't. If there's going to be criticism in place, shouldn't National be, or anyone be going in and seeing how this is actually operating before challenging it?
So let's just take numbers alone, right? We know that the police, themselves have told us that there's 240,000 prohibited firearms in circulation. Mm-hmm. So if you do the math, that would mean that each buyback event needs to have at least 1,000 firearms showing up, and they're averaging less than 120. So, you know, I think it's okay to ask questions around how's this working, what can we do better, what does it look like going forward? But where our primary criticism lays, and look, again, Laura, we haven't seen the legislation, so we need to be very careful about talking on stuff that hasn't even been introduced into Parliament. But where we have a real issue, and have been consistent on this, is going after people, let's say, in the sporting firearms sector, people who, you know, you don't reduce crime by going after regulating people who are, you know, quite frankly, innocent and doing fine and have a sporting element to what they do. So we've been really vocal about that, and then the government not going after gangs more, for instance, from the firearm prohibition order legislation. So we just think that they could really go after crimson gangs a lot more and back off the sporting people.
Mm. But it seems that this entire issue has kind of been turned away from where it originally stemmed from. It just seems as though National has turned this into an opportunity to target gangs.
Well, I don't know about targeting gangs, but where this all stems from, right, is that it's about identifying guns that are now prohibited, and it's about getting them out of circulation. Mm-hmm. So there's a series of things that you need to do to make sure that happens. And you know, for those who are intensely oppositional around handing in guns, then absolutely, you know, that's something that they won't be complying with the law. So we need to... look, another thing to realise is that we've had confirmation from Stuart Nash that they're not even tracking MSSAs, the military-style stuff, and that's the heart of what the ban was supposed to cover. So if we're going to talk about what was the original intent, it was over military-style weapons. And if you're not even tracking that, you know, a register the government's not using, you know, you've got to ask questions around if we know what we're supposed to be doing but we're not pulling it off, and the gun buyback schemes are getting, you know, a tiny percentage of what they could, then why can't we ask questions around it? And why do we have to be slammed by the police union?
Mm, interesting. I'm going to end on my last question for the day, as you know I like to do. So my question today is, who is your favorite cartoon character?
Ooh, favorite cartoon character.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. I kind of want to go old school for Jughead, but I'm actually not that old.
I mean, I remember Jughead. I used to get the comics.
Oh, okay.
Oh, absolutely.
All right, so I didn't just age myself.
No.
The only reason is that I used to go to my nana's up the road,
mm-hmm.
and it must have been like even back in my dad's era, there'd be these really old school cartoon, you know, comic books. And I associate Jughead with going to my nana's place and eating crunchy bars.
Oh, that's cute though.
It is pretty cute. Yeah. So that's kind of my historic memorable character. But I don't know, I just did Demolition Derby at Easter this year, and I had Leela on the side of my car.
Nice.
From Futurama.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm a bit of old school and a bit of new school.
Oh, love it. Well, we'll be talking with you next week, Denise, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too, Laura. See ya.
See ya. Bye.
The National Party's Denise Lee on 95 BFM.